Osiris.
What's going on, everybody? This is RJ. We are here for what we call the live show. Apologies for being late. Brian and I were actually on another call about this event that we're planning around the Dick's Sporting Goods fish shows, and it's really exciting, and we apologize for being late, but we are here. Aren't we, Brian?
We are here.
Are we here?
We're here.
We're here. So here's the deal, guys. We are going to talk about Live Tracks 9 today, which is a two-day show from Las Vegas, 2007. I really love these shows. I'm just going to say it from the beginning, Brian. So I'm excited to talk about them, but we have a couple things we want to say first. I think the first thing I want to say is that we said yesterday that our last of the 10 Dave Matthews Band shows that we're going to go through in this initial go round is going to be on Monday, and I misspoke. It's actually going to be on Tuesday, and that'll be Live Tracks 10. That's the first thing. The next thing is that I said that we would go to a different artist after 10 episodes. I said that yesterday. I did not make a mistake on that. We are doing that. Brian, would you like to say who we're profiling next, or would you like me to?
I would. We are profiling an artist who I can say this without any hyperbole. Okay. Are you ready for what I'm about to say?
I am.
We are going to an artist who, without this artist's music, I would not exist as a human being. I don't want to get into like the biological stuff about all this, but like I can tell you without any, with zero uncertainty, I do not exist without this artist. This artist has made, I would say, like three, maybe four of my top 20 albums of all time. Is responsible for one of the five greatest concerts I've ever seen. Is a man with a huge band that takes music and turns it into a truly spiritual, religious experience every time you hear it. And that man is The Boss.
The Boss.
The Boss. Mr. Bruce Springsteen.
It's all happening, guys. I want to say, just for those of you who have joined since we started, so we're going to do Live Tracks 10 on Tuesday, and then on Wednesday, we're going to start with some Bruce Springsteen live releases. It's going to be fun. Thank you for that intro, Brian. I really appreciate the passion you brought to that.
Just for clarity, for people listening, we are going to go through Bruce Springsteen's Live Archive series, which started in 2014. We're going to do very similar to what we've done with Live Tracks here. We're going to go through the first 10 volumes, see how we feel at that point in time, and jump off from Bruce, return to Bruce, return to Dave at some point in time. There's a lot of stuff to do, but I'm just looking through these first 10. There's some meat in here. And yeah. I just want to point it out right now. I cannot wait until we get to Live Archive number 6. All of these are available on nugs.net. So Tyler, great comment over here. I'm going to throw this link into the chat so that
people, I don't know. We should try. Are you, yeah, I know where you, while you're doing that, I want to say that I'm excited for number 2, which is just from a year that I think has some amazing live Bruce, and number 4, yes, which is takes place about 3 miles from where I am right now, from 1975. And this is just amazing. It's going to be awesome.
I can't wait.
Okay. So I mentioned before you joined, Brian, we were on a call with some people in Colorado. We're going to be announcing an amazing, amazing event series around the Dick's fish shows, 4 days in late August, early September. And it's just going to be phenomenal. And that's why we're late. And with this program, we use If you don't start by 9 minutes after your schedule, you can't broadcast to Facebook. That's a Facebook thing. So we got in just under the gun. But I do want to say, in the spirit of live events, if anyone's going to be in Philly next week for the Fish shows, or if you live in Philly, or if you just want to come hang out with us, we are doing a live show at the Ardmore Music Hall on Monday. I'm starting to get prepped. I'm starting to write down my questions for Tom Hamilton and Chris Forsythe and Daniel Donato. It's a little overwhelming. It's a little scary, but it's going to be really fun because they're going to play a ton of music. And every time we do one of these events, people in the crowd just come up to me after and are like, you should do more of these. So that's what we're trying to do. You can check out the event at osirispod.com/osirislive. Join us there. We have other live events that we're going to be telling you about soon. And if you like what we're doing here, as we're making this transition from Dave to Bruce, share the pod with your friends. Help people discover the pod and help us grow it. We would appreciate it. So, okay, Brian, we are talking about a two-show release. One was from 32307, one was from 32407, from the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. I've seen some shows there. I know you have too. This is 32307 was my 28th birthday. Not sure where I was or what I was doing, but I was probably doing something. And that's really all I have to say. What else do we need to know about where Bruce was, where Dave was in 07 or the MGM Grand before we get into the show?
We started this series with me saying Trey inadvertently every time that we were talking about Dave Matthews, and now we are saying Bruce. So we're on either sides of this. The MGM Grand Garden Arena, this place opened in 1983. It's a huge home for boxing and wrestling events. It hosted the Grammys in 2022. Was the biggest event that has happened at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. I think that this venue has been dwarfed by the T-Mobile Center that opened, or T-Mobile Arena opened across the street. That's where the Vegas Golden Knights play, and that's where a lot of concert draws are. I've been to the MGM Grand Garden Arena for Fish's 2018 Halloween run. They've played every one of their Halloween runs since 2014 at the MGM Grand Garden Arena.
And it may get overshadowed again within the next couple of years by the Sphere.
I think it's going to, from the Sphere. I want to know your opinion on this. So I've only been there once. I absolutely love this arena. It is a total dump. You have to walk through a casino, down a very long hallway, and then down this like corridor that is a clear fire hazard. Like, I don't know how this place actually like passed code, because like every time you walk up there, people just get stuck for hours waiting to get into these shows. It smells. It's like there's a haze of smoke hanging over the place. The seats are like just cheap plastic that you could like rip out if necessary. I love it. It feels like it was built in the 1970s, and yet it was built just like 30 years ago, and just kind of feels like it's been forgotten aside from jam band shows and UFC events.
Yeah. I mean, it's a special opportunity. If you're going to Vegas to see shows, and especially, you know, Halloween or another kind of, I mean, it's always a special occasion to go to Las Vegas, I think, unless you live there, which not that many people I know live there, although a few.
Shout out to Justin Bruce.
Justin Bruce. Our friend John Barber lived there for a while. My friend Aaron Dev lived there for a while. I don't think Dev's watching, but we can just keep naming people who we know who lived in Vegas.
My good buddy Sanjay, he's been banned from the MGM because he's too good at betting on basketball.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. so yeah, I mean, I love it too. I mean, I was wondering if Fish was going to play there for Halloween this year, and I'm out for a while. Like, I need to take a break because I've been twice since 2018, and just with Halloween, you know, I gotta take a break from you know,
traveling to the desert. Yeah, I'm curious to that point, like Vegas. It's such a destination, and it's such an interesting point that we've reached here with this series. And it's kind of going to get into some of the themes that we're going to talk about. One of the biggest things I kept thinking about with this run. And just to like piggyback off of you, I I loved this release. And I feel, I was thinking ever since we went live yesterday, and this is the interesting thing about like this show happening during your work week. And as you're like listening to a bunch of music and then trying to comment on it immediately, like I feel in a sense that like I came out really harsh against yesterday's show.
Yeah,
I had some, I think valid criticism. And by the end, we were both like, I actually kind of like this show. I really loved these two concerts. I thought it put the band in a really interesting place. And as I dug in from a research standpoint, like, as I mentioned, I go into these as blind as possible, try to listen and then gather information based on how I've interpreted this. There's a lot of really cool bust outs. There's a lot of really cool rarities that happen at this show that I had no idea of going in, but I'm curious, like, just as an aside, what are your thoughts on Las Vegas and have those thoughts changed over time in one direction or another?
I don't like it there. I don't really like it. It's a weird place to be. It just is like, you get there, you go to your hotel, you go and you, you know, you drink and you gamble, if you're me, and you see music, you know, and that's it. And that's fun. But, after a few days, it's like, okay, that's enough. But I do think concerts, you know, concerts are part of Las Vegas history, of course, you know, going back to when Las Vegas was built in the desert around, you know, the Rat Pack and music that was, it was almost like a destination that was built for gambling and music and drinking. And that's kind of cool. I just think after a couple of days, it's like, all right, I've had enough. I mean, I feel like you don't get a lot of fresh air, you know, mostly inside. It's mostly like dark or at least not sunlight. I don't go on like a lot of hikes or anything when I'm there, you know, usually sleep in if I can. And then I end up like just going to eat food and gamble and drink, you know, and that's, I think that's fun, but it you can only do it so much.
Yeah. The couple of days thing is really, that's really critical. I can't be there for more than like 4 or 5 days, but I will say like within me as a person, morally and ethically, like I should hate Las Vegas. I should hate everything about it. Like there's no reason a city like that should exist in the desert. Like think about how much water is being rerouted just to make that city function on a day-to-day basis. Just shouldn't be, it shouldn't exist. That said, I got to admit like over time, I've really grown to love Las Vegas. And like in an isolated situation where you fly in, you feel like you're in this like playground for adults. There's really great restaurants there. I ate like amazing food when I went there in 2018. And we passed through there last summer on a family road trip and like stopped for just incredible like New York style bagel sandwiches. I found amazing Chinese food in like a strip mall. There's something about Las Vegas that like just appeals to me as I age, and the experience of flying in for a very specific event and then having all these tangential things that you can do outside of it. I'm glad it exists. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair. All right. Well, let's talk about this show a little bit. This, two volume live tracks, which is ambitious just to get through, you know, it's a lot. I really like the way that this show, I guess, starts or unfolds. What do you think is the best Dave Matthews Band opener? Do you have a thought on your favorite?
Yeah, I do. I think it's Seek Up.
Okay. I think that's got to be number two for me. I think the Pantala Naga Pampa into Rapunzel is the best. I feel like it just builds the energy. It's a nice way to like kick it off. And this one in particular, I'll probably say this several times, but you know, the horns in here, I'm a real sucker for horns. Just adding one more horn to this band, it just changes the sound completely.
Totally.
And I think, you know, I think this sort of combo, especially the Rapunzel jam, you know, come pretty fast. This is kind of like my favorite sound from this band.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. And I kind of think of like Pantala Naga Pampa and Rapunzel as like fishes buried alive almost, or punch you in the eye. Like doesn't matter the show you're at. Like when, if they open up with that, you know that they're like welcoming you to the show in like the right way. There's no shock value. It's just kind of like, all right, we're here. Like this is happening right now. And I think there's something really special about that. This Rapunzel, I put on my, I'm doing like a running best of live tracks through the Nugs app as I'm kind of making a larger playlist. Totally agree with you on the horn standpoint. Like there's something energetic at the end of this Rapunzel that just hit me almost immediately. And it felt to me like I really liked the Fenway listen that we did last week. Last Thursday, we talked about the Fenway shows from 06. I felt like this took that sound that they had in summer 2006 and kind of like blew it out in a way that immediately felt like, welcome to Las Vegas. Like this is going to be a killer run here in the desert in March. Most people are flying in from parts of the country that are just kind of crappy at this time of year. It's right in the middle of March Madness. So there's a lot of opportunities for like really fun gambling where you just lose ridiculous amounts of money that you shouldn't be gambling on. But you know, it's fun in the moment. And like having a song like Rapunzel just like blows them out right away.
Yeah. Yeah. And the show flow, which we talked about a little bit yesterday, just in terms of the potential drawbacks with that. I think that the show flow reflects my feeling, which is you have this kind of big, you know, opener with a great jam and then you get Satellite. And I think that kind of, I guess that just takes a little bit of the energy out of the room. But I gotta say, I'm kind of a big fan of When the World Ends. And I don't know why. It's not like the pot references really, because there's plenty of that, but there's something about it that just is like appealing to me. And I like that song. So I didn't feel like that was as much of a dip as Satellite, but I think in the show flow, this middle of this show is a little bit, it's a little bit sketchy, including what I want to ask you about time of the season and whether, is this like an ironic sort of, you know, reference to Vegas lounge acts, or is this like, is this an attempt to play a serious cover?
This and another cover that's coming later, I should absolutely love and should really fit with Dave Matthews Band's ethos. And I just couldn't do it. It felt to me in the same similar vein to like Super Freak. And it made me wonder, like, I kind of feel like in some cases, Dave Matthews Band needs to play covers of songs that nobody knows, where it's like, oh, okay, it is a cover song. You know, it also made me wonder, and there's another one of those coming later as well that I absolutely loved. It also made me wonder, like, Time of the Season really, really needs like a legit backup singer for it. And it made me think about how, like, throughout so much of Dave Matthews Band's career, aside from the Lovely Ladies in like the 99, 2001, 2002 period, none of the other guys are really singing backup on any of these songs. Like you get Boyd singing True Reflections, you know, his own song, but like there's really no, it made me think about like the big differences between this band, why it really is the Dave Matthews Band versus like the Grateful Dead versus Fish, in the sense that like, so like I would 99% of Dave Matthews songs are just sung by Dave Matthews in the moment. Like Time of the Season had a little bit, I think that they were like members singing into their instrument mics, it sounded like, but this is a song that kind of needs like that backup vocals to really make it work. I thought as well, just from like a show flow standpoint, I'm just looking at it, and we got some great notes yesterday that like the Ants Marching show flow seems to be like the equivalent of like Fantasy Tour for Fish, where there's just like a skewed critique of what's happening. And I totally get that. Like there's a lot of moments where I'm like, really, people didn't like this. But I felt When the World Ends and Hunger for the Great Light, like as two songs that are, to me at least, like When the World Ends, I knew from the Everyday period, but these are two songs that like the band is trying to push forward in the 2000s as kind of this next step. I personally think that they're like on opposite spectrums of kind of what the band is singing about, what Dave is writing about, but work really well from a thematic standpoint. So like I get the uneven flow to start the show with Satellite, with Time of the Season, but I really liked the placement of When the World Ends and Hunger for the Great Light as well. They're good updates on the larger themes that Dave seems to write about.
Well, okay. So I guess we need to, well, what a Dream Girl. How do you feel about that?
Do we want to get to the awards already? Because this is,
let's mix it up. Let's go straight to the, let's mix it up. I want to hear your award. I assume it's the best, your favorite jam.
I'm sorry, Robbie Lewis. I really am. I really appreciate you hanging. I hope I don't lose you as a viewer right now. I did not like this song. Now, I have zero context for this song. I listened to this song. This was probably my first, if not like maybe my second time hearing this song. We talked about this in episode in the Live Track 7 episode about 12/31/96 with Matt Dwyer, where we were talking about like Dave Matthews getting to a point where there was like a standardized method of how to write songs. And this song to me, as I was listening to it, I was just like, all right, so you got your car, you got like three or four bottles of wine, you got your special girl, you pull off into like a meadow, you drink that wine, you get a good drunk, you pass out, you wake up, and you guys make some love. And it all sounds amazing. But I was just like, this is, like, how many different ways does Dave need to say this? And he said this so much more creatively in the past. Like, I think about a song like Crush, that like the first time I heard that song, I was like 13 years old. And as I was like understanding those lyrics, I was like, wow, like that's what it's like to like really love someone and to like be a grown up. And like, you like get these like images in that song and these like metaphors that you like cannot understand until you're older. This kind of just comes out and says it. And I just found it to be like very obvious and very to the point in a way that I was like, do we need this song? And it kind of got me back to like the questions that we've been asking. We talked about this yesterday, like the challenges of new songs versus old songs, where the old songs really seem to like be the pinnacle moments of a show. And some of these new songs are still trying to find their footing. And Robbie, we love you, and our opinions may be across the spectrum, but I'm still here to talk about it. And I appreciate Tyler. It's hang out. We're I think we'll get to some stuff that you and I both agree on.
And Tyler and Robbie have been here, I think, almost every episode, if not every episode. We really appreciate you guys, and thanks for going easy on us as we're becoming more familiar with these live releases. I've learned more about Dave Matthews in the past 3 weeks than I have in my whole life. 100%. So this is amazing, and a lot of that learning has come from you guys. So thank you.
And I'm totally open that in like 4 years, I could hear Dream Girl in a new way and be like, wait, actually, I was wrong. Like, I will just say that. That is one of like my favorite things about this series that we're doing. I love to be wrong about music and learn about it later. And so I could be totally wrong about this. This is just my first impression.
And if you guys want to see Brian be wrong about music, make sure you tune into HF. That was just too easy. I think last week I said Louisiana Bayou as a bathroom break for me. And I think I don't know if this version was different or if it's just because like it has Rashawn Ross and Butch Taylor on it. It has a pretty cool build in the jam that I really enjoyed. And I have to say the I'll Back You Up here with the story from Dave at the beginning about how he worked in a bar and he prepared a tape of songs he'd written and passed it on to Carter and Leroy and talked about the formation of the band. And he played I'll Back You Up. And I thought that was really cool. I think I heard him tell that story on Eric Krasno's podcast, which we mentioned a couple of weeks ago. If you guys haven't heard that interview, we just re-released it on Eric Krasno Plus One. If you want to hear a really fun interview with Dave Matthews, but I thought that was pretty cool. And then, sorry, Brian, I'm just sort of going through my thoughts here, but
no, you're good.
Down by the River, like, you know, you and I both love Neil Young. I would say that he's you know, top artist for both of us. And I just like, I don't need a cover of this. I don't even need a cover of this from Fish. I don't need a cover of this is one of those songs that really only Neil Young can play well, I think, because especially the jam, but even the song, it's one note for 9 minutes and it's fucking glorious, you know? So I guess I'll stop there for now.
No, I mean, I'm right there with you. Neil Young is one of my favorite artists of all time. He's there for me with Fish, with Dylan, with the Grateful Dead, with Springsteen, with U2, with where Dave Matthews was for me when I was like, 15, 16 years old. I learned about the song Cortez the Killer because of Dave Matthews Band. They played that at one of my first Dave Matthews shows. And I remember just being like, because it sounds like Bartender in a sense. And I remember thinking like, holy crap, this is another really cool song. And I think Dave Matthews Band plays that song really, really well. I think there's enough in that song for them. Down by the River, you need a lead guitarist and you need this like very loose sound that sounds like the entire band could fall apart in an instant. And that is not the Dave Matthews Band. They are a very tight, everybody like holds their own weight in a really significant way. And it's one of the things that makes their sound so spectacular. And it makes it hard for me to hear a song like this that is so loose and jangly and sounds like it's in a garage. I kind of feel like and I don't know if this has happened, but like if they were going to play a Neil Young song at this run, like something off of Harvest, something off of, Old Ways could work, something off of Harvest Moon, something off of Prairie Wind. Like there's a lot of eras of Neil Young that would work better from a Dave Matthews standpoint than going to Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere and like trying to just like emulate the garage sound. I will say really quick, one thing that blew me away. So that story that he tells before, I'll back you up. I remember reading about that when I was first getting into Dave Matthews Band. It's one of my favorite things about this band. And it's one of the things that like will forever like hold a place in my heart is that I don't know like how much of this has been, you know, mythologized, but like the idea that you can just be a guy working at a bar who's writing some songs and pass a tape along to two of the best musicians in your town who also happen to be like some of the best musicians globally at what they do. And then you just become like an arena rock superstar, like writing some of the best songs for like a generation. It's so inspiring and it's so like, it's so incredible. But it's wild. This is the first I'll Back You Up since August 7th, 2004, which was the date of the Alpine show that we did yesterday. First version of The Maker since 9603. And apparently this is the first full band show to feature three full cover songs since October 6th, 2004, which reading all of that, I was like, wow, there is a lot of significance here. These were their first shows as a full band since October 2006. Dave had played with Tim in the early part of 2007. And so it's cool to me that they announce these destination shows and almost immediately just kind of blow it out for fans. It had to be a really special experience to be at these shows.
Yeah, I agree. I also just want to, for those who are listening, Tyler said Down by the River has been covered 20 times. Majority is when Warren Haynes joins them on stage, which makes sounds a lot cool. of sense. So I want to talk about just something that I get into a theme that I've mentioned already, but I want to talk about it a little more. Just the Crush jam, which I don't know if that song is usually jammed like that, but it's amazing again how much one additional horn can add to like the style of improvisation. I'm a huge jazz fan and you know, this really appeals to me, but I really love this jam. I really love the Jimmy Thing jam with the addition of the trumpet. I think that just changes the sound completely. And is that, I guess, do you agree that this is like a great sound with these two horns? And also, is that the current lineup pretty much with Tim Reynolds? Because does Rashawn Ross play with them? Is he a permanent member or is he just still a guest? Do you know?
I am pulling him up right now.
Someone will tell us. But what do you think about the sound?
I thought the sound was incredible, and I'm just looking at the stats here. It looks like Rashawn has played a ton of shows with the band since basically 2005, so I'm guessing there is a permanence to him. I'd love for someone to clarify that. I got it. So this is the current lineup, but now they have Buddy Strong on keys permanently. So Rashawn is there. Crush is one of my favorite. It's in the top 5 to 10 Dave Matthews songs I've ever heard. I think that the accomplishment of it on the studio recording to write a love song and then turn that love song into an 8.5 minute long song that also became a hit single with a full video that didn't go the full 8.5 minutes, but like it was a long song whenever it was played on the radio or whenever it was played on MTV. I think lyrically it's brilliant. And I think every time they play it, I'm just looking at the stats of it. The longest version is 18 minutes, which happened on July 27th, 2009. So, you know, this song definitely gets jams. It gets, you know, it gets out there. I think that there's an extended outro on the Boston version. It has that like musical space for exploration, but I'm right there with you. Like whatever was happening with the band around this point in time, we talked about this a bit with like the typical situation from the Alpine show. I talked about this with the bartender jam from Fenway, the Seek Up jam from the following night of the Vegas run. Like they're finding a musical space that while it's not surprising in a type two jamming type of standpoint, it kind of works the same way that like you can listen to a jazz standard and hear something new every time. Like you can listen to like something like Kind of Blue, and every time you listen to it, you hear something new, even though there's not like as much exploration as you'd hear from Miles Davis 10, 15 years later. And that kind of controlled jamming within the song and adding a new member around this point in time, it adds just a lot to this that I went back and listened to this Crush a ton of times.
Yeah, it's really cool, really great. And I think the Jimmy thing kind of continues that. And just to jump to the next show, there's only three repeats between the shows, but you know we're used to no repeats in some capacity or another with some of the live bands we see. Do you think that they expected different crowds to show up both nights? Or do you think that they expected, you know, people to stay for the two nights?
It's an interesting thought because Dave mentions at some point in the second show, like, thanks to everyone who was here last night. And I was kind of just like, who's flying to Las Vegas and seeing one Dave Matthews show? I mean, I guess that exists. But I've kind of always heard, and I'd love to hear like listeners here, what their thoughts are on this. I've kind of always heard that the band expects like 40% return, which, you know, is high, but not like an insane amount of people that are coming. You know, it's not like, I would imagine the Fish return is a lot higher there. So you get like the new set list, but yeah, you get like songs like, The Maker, which they had just busted out at that point in time, Down by the River, you know, these kind of standout covers that give you an opportunity to like give fans who missed something special the night before to get it again.
So, quick note here
from Tyler Broadbeck that the opening act, I found this really funny, and I was deep diving Dave message boards last night, and I found the thread on Ants Marching from like the day that the shows were announced, and people were freaking out because there wasn't any announcement at that point in time for an upcoming tour. But the fray opens up, and there is so much anger in those threads, rightly so, for the fray opening up. And apparently they played the exact same set both nights, did not care if it was the same crowd or not.
I don't know anything about the fray.
I would keep it that way.
Yeah, okay. So we had a comment earlier that this was basically the first show of the tour, because a few shows before were Dave and Tim. So they're still kind of getting into this spring tour, but what did you hear differently from nights one and two, or what else do you want to talk about? Because I have another kind of like a couple more thoughts, but I want to hear your take, and I want to tell you that they played Down by the River again.
I have two thoughts. The first was, I was thinking about this as like the Dave review shows, and not just because of the location, but there's, you know, you get the first Gravedigger since 72703. It's the first Some Devil song that's played at a full band show since that album came out. First time Halloween had been played since 12-10-05. First time it closes a show since 12-15-98. They up the ante and they give us four cover songs for the first time since 2-13-92. Like, you're getting these really special moments that make this significant, that give fans something that they've traveled to Las Vegas for, which is a very notable aspect of playing Las Vegas residencies. You also get, and I personally liked night two more than night one. I thought it flowed really nicely. It had songs that I really enjoy overall a little bit more. But you know, you get like it opening with Crash Into Me, which we talked about in episode 6 here, the 1231, or episode 7, the live track 7, about how big of a song that is for the band. And like, to open a show with that feels significant to me. You get then like a little bit later, you get Gray Street, this like just fantastic, not at this point anymore new, but like when it came out, it kind of represented a new evolution, a new step for the band in a really cool way. You get like this great segment of Seek Up, Still Water, Don't Drink the Water, Dancing Nancy's, that showcases like older Dave with kind of this darkness that emerges in his writing that I also got out of a lot of these. I don't know. You just get throughout this show, and like it ends obviously with like Too Much and Trippin' Billy's, like the main set. You get this like picture of their overall career in a full scape in this show, that like you walk away from it really feeling who the band is now, but who they've also been. And just kind of looking at the song spread, you get four stand-up songs, three Crash songs, two Under the Table and Dreaming, two Before These Crowded Streets, two Busted Stuff. Like, you get a sense of this band like across their whole spectrum in this show, that felt to me like it made sense to me why they would release these shows, because you're getting like a snapshot of this band both now, but also throughout the last 15 years.
Interesting. We're going to talk a lot about the darkness of, in terms of songwriting with Bruce, I think, just because there are more clear, maybe not more clear, more clear to me in terms of the eras, you know, like you have Nebraska and like you have these albums that are almost like obviously dark. What do you feel like you can hear that more in this, in some of these songs, and which songs kind of like, I guess, I don't know, which songs best represent that, in terms of Dave?
I mean, Gray Street has always been a really dark song for me. Just thematically, you're writing about someone who's like kind of at the end of the rope in a lot of cases, and there's a lot of emotion in that. Seek Up, even though like the chorus has like this really like profound message of like hope, like that overall song feels to me as like you're just constantly, endlessly searching. Don't Drink the Water, continuously, like feels to me as a song that he's writing. There's like political messages in it. There's a lot of anger in that song. There's a lot of angst. Even some of the, like, I always find a song like Dancing Nancy's, which I was really, really excited to hear that they played that at this show. And it was really interesting to hear that song, knowing that like the majority of the versions I've heard are from the 1990s. Like, that song pushes and pulls between this realization of like, everything's going to be okay. I just need to like accept that the way of the world, I just need to flow with it, with this constant question of like, who am I now? Who am I going to, like, who was I? Did I do the things I should have done? And then like towards the end of the overall set, I didn't spend a ton of time with the lyrics of Stolen Away on 55th and 3rd, but like melodically, musically, it just felt very dismal. It felt very dark to me in a lot of cases. And you follow that up with Down by the River and a song like Too Much, that is just like an overblown, you know, critique of capitalism, and kind of like 90s consumerism. And then you finish it out with Halloween, which is this angsty, angry song that Dave wrote about this woman that he loved, which is the same person he wrote I'll Back You Up about. Like, it just, it felt throughout this overall set, the struggles that he's gone through, the perspective he's looked at the world, the constant push and pull of trying to be as optimistic as possible while also really being like weighted down by, I don't want to say negativity, but like an overall, you know, fear of the unknown, really fascinated me. It just kind of hit me throughout these lessons. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I'm not sure that I have more to add to it. I'm definitely like, you know, more familiar with and attracted to like the songs that I know. So some of these songs that we've listened to over the past 9 volumes are still new to me. Cause I basically didn't listen to Dave after Crash, you know? So anything after Crash is kind of new. So I like that insight though. And I appreciate that. I think one thing I want to ask you specifically, I think back to night one, we talked about Boyd, the past couple of days, but every day with effects on the violin, how does that make you feel?
Not good. without revisiting everything we talked about with it, Boyd Tinsley, like as we get into this late 2000s era and we know that we're about to lose Leroy Moore within the next year and a half in this band, I continuously think that there was a different way. Here's the big paycheck for Tim Reynolds, and Boyd Tinsley will pass you along for stylistic differences.
All right. Okay. Well, let's...
What did you think of the effects on?
No, I mean, it did like imitate a guitar a little bit, which I'm always, sure, you know, missing or at least like a fan of when it comes out. Yeah, didn't do a lot for me. All right. Let's get into our awards, Brian. Bathroom Break, I think we already covered. I think both of us already covered.
I had Dream Girl. Remind me what yours was.
Also Dream Girl. And sorry again, Robbie. But thank you for sticking with us and being a good sport. MVP of the 2-night run.
I go Carter. I just like... Matt said it on Tuesday, like it's kind of blasphemous to say that any member other than Carter is the MVP because he just brings it every single night. I've never heard an off night, but we'll talk about it in my jam of the show. Like there's a segment that he just completely crushes. And I was blown away hearing it. What about you? Who's your MVP?
I mean, this might be blasphemous, but because of how these shows hit me differently from some of the others, I mean, I think Rashawn Ross, just because it changes the dynamics of the jam so much, and I think affected this show in such an interesting way that I'm going with Rashawn.
I was thinking about, you know, I talked about this on Tuesday that like, you know, the guest effect on the Dave Matthews Band. We got you, Robbie. Don't worry. We'll bring you back too. You know, and you talk about Rashawn, who's relatively new to the band at this point in time. I almost wonder, like, this band, there's so much. And one thing I've been blown away by listening to these shows is there's a lot written into these songs that you don't necessarily notice if you just kind of listen at surface level. Like there's a lot of weird changes and weird dynamics and a lot of like, this has to stop right here. And then we move into this rhythm. It's not as like progressive rock as like Fish would get into. It's not like super experimental, but like they're definitely playful within their songs. And I almost wonder if they have to think so much about how to make these songs work and really impact people because people are there for those moments to be recreated live. And that gives a little bit of freedom to a guest who doesn't necessarily have to adhere to those rules and can just like sprinkle their ideas over the top. I don't know. I was just thinking about that right now. Because I agree with you. Like Rashawn adds a ton to this overall show.
That's a good point. What's your jam?
It's pretty obvious. I apologize for being so obvious, but you know, I got to follow my gut on this, and it's Seek Up from Night Two. Again, like I don't look at the set list. I just press play and just let these shows come to me when I listen to them. And The Idea of You is kind of right there with me with Dream Girl. It kind of reminds me of U2's Song for Someone. Like, who is the song about? Is this just like open-ended? It can be about anyone. Like, The Idea of You, like, what are we actually singing about here? And then, you know, so I was a little bit like perturbed when that song started, when that song happened, and then Seek Up started, and I am a sucker for Seek Up. And the last 5 minutes of this, like, there was a great segment and then it kind of cools off and Carter just takes over. And I texted you and I texted Matt. I was like, you guys have to listen to this. Carter is all over this. And it blew me away. I was so, so into this. Really, really great performance. I considered from night one, The Crush, but the Seek Up is it. What about you? What's your jam?
I think I'm going with The Crush from night one, just because of that jazz influence I mentioned, which I loved. And I just liked the vibe of it. It was really fun. And that was the point in the show when I was like, this would have been a really fun show to be at. So I'm going with the Crush, which I just think was great.
I think that's
so. We had fun today, Brian, or I did, at least. I hope you did.
I had a great time.
And we're going to be okay. So here's the deal, everybody, for the last time today. Anyway, we're going to go to Live Tracks 10 on Tuesday at noon. And you can listen anytime on wherever you get your podcasts. And Live Tracks 10, from what I understand, is an international show. And it has a couple really, really long jams, like longer than what I'm used to with Dave Matthews Band. So I'm excited to dig into this.
Also has a special guest, another special guest, but a very special guest this time. That is someone who, if you went back to the mid 1990s, you would never think would be guesting with Dave Matthews Band. Do you know who that is?
I'm going to find out when I start listening to the show, and I don't want to know yet.
I don't want to ruin your surprise.
No, but I do listen to these shows knowing what's coming, unlike you. So I'll know once I open it up. Okay, so Tuesday we're going to do Live Tracks 10. And then, everybody, we are going to Bruce Springsteen on Wednesday. And that's going to be Bruce Springsteen Archives Volume 1. And that's just, it's going to be great. Do you have anything else to say about that?
March 9th, 2012, the Wrecking Ball Tour, which was the last time I saw Bruce Springsteen. He plays the Apollo Theater, tiny theater in New York City, very famous theater. But we go from that to dip into the 70s. We get some mid 80s. We get some 2000s. We get some 2010s. Like, there's within this first 10 set, we get some very notable Bruce periods, but then we get a couple eras that were really, really chastised at the time. And I cannot wait to dive into those because I personally love those eras unabashedly. And so we're going to have Matt on a bunch to talk through these, and it's going to be killer for us. I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And I mean, goes without saying, you can probably tell Brian and I are both huge Springsteen fans. So it's going to be a little different because we're going to be more familiar with the material, but we'll probably have smarter commentary. So if you've thought that anything we've said is smart so far, stay tuned, because I think we'll actually have something funny to say and maybe something interesting. And we will have some great guests as well. So thank you guys for listening and tuning in and watching. And we'll see you all on Tuesday for Live Tracks 10. And thanks for hanging with us.
See y'all.
Osiris.